Ladies and gentlemen, Cairo Radio is honored and privileged to present to you Cairo Nights with Mr. Talk Radio, Jack Stein.
All right, welcome back to Cairo Nights. Joining us on a Tuesday evening, one Hannah Scott, so we can rout out the shoplifting menace, one shoplifter at a time. Hannah, I know we were talking about this before the show, but I got to get this story out of my system.
Okay.
Because this happened over the weekend. It was the perfect crime. It was absolutely the perfect crime in regards to shoplifting, and I think that these two people who pulled it off are geniuses, and I don't think that most people realize the geniuses that they are. Now, is shoplifting bad? Absolutely. Is shoplifting a crime? 100%. But the way that these two people handled this interaction was Michael Jordan level shoplifting. So before we get into the legislation around shoplifting, this is an amazing. Okay, so I am in a local pharmacy. I am buying cream for my toe fungus, which, as you know, I have been battling for nigh on years at this point.
Yes.
And I have to buy a very particular kind of cream per the orders of Dr. Z. So I'm there, I'm going through the aisle, and I notice that they don't have my particular cream. And so I am very disappointed because now my toe fungus will become just rage back into my life. And so I'm like, well, I'll try to find some other thing to kind of assuage my depression around my toe fungus. So I'm meandering around this particular pharmacy trying to do some retail therapy. And as I'm doing so, over by the front where the doors slide open, there is a guy who is attempting to walk out, and he clearly has two bottles that he has hidden underneath his hoodie, but not very well. It's almost like he's almost like in a very cartoonish way, where the tops are sticking out of his hoodie and the large. So he's hiding them in his hoodie, almost like a kangaroo hides a baby. Does that make sense? He's got it
in the pouch.
And so the very large security guard, who I am very chummy with because he likes my Pomeranian, I see him say, "Hey man, you got to put those back, all right?" And that homeless guy goes, "Oh come on, man. Come on, man!" And the overweight security guard goes, "You got to put them back, man. I don't want to call the police." So the overweight security guard follows that guy back to the liquor aisle. Meanwhile, his lady friend, with several bags—no hyperbole—several bags worth of stuff, walks right out, right through the front door.
So, yikes! I get it. Diversion.
It was genius. And then the guy with the hoodie, as he is walking out, he goes, "Hey, man, thanks for not calling the cops on me, man." And the security guard is like, he's like, "Hey, no problem, brother. No problem.
Wow.
I'll be praying for you later." Totally duped. So
that's a problem. So that's not what you see. I'm telling you, I am not exaggerating when I say 80% of the stores that I go to throughout Puget Sound, it's not just Seattle. It can be Snohomish County. It can be Pierce County. I go in. It can be a convenience store. It can be a grocery store. There are stores I go into that will not let me take my purse. I have to check it into a locker.
Wow.
I'm not joking, because they get so much shoplifting. And I get very angry and I say, "No, I appreciate that. That sucks for you, but I'm not doing that. So I'll shop elsewhere." And they lose that business from me. And I mean, it is so bad for these smaller businesses generally, because they can't afford to have that kind of loss. And they there was a bill that was just introduced from Representative Dan Griffey, who is, he doesn't usually get into the back and the forth of the, where we want to land on what we want to, send people to jail for and all of that. His big thing has always been pushing to extend or end the statute of limitations on sexual assault. That's what he's very much known for.
Okay.
And, but this time he put this bill out for organized retail theft. It basically says, yeah, you can ask people, like the guy you were just describing with the pouch on his way out the door, you could stop him and say, "Are you going to pay for that?" And then that would maybe, he could say no and try to bolt, and then you can go and you can arrest him. Or he'd be like ashamed and be like, "Yep, I'm going to pay for it," and go up and pay for it, even if he was going to steal. Because right now you can't do anything the way the law is written until they get outside the door.
So
until they officially take your stuff. And then it doesn't happen. And so now I'll go to all these stores and like 80% of the time I see somebody bolt out the door with a case of beer or some kind of snack or clothes. I've seen women who take all kinds of clothes and bolt out the door. Places I would never, first of all, I would never steal. But if I were a thief, I would never consider trying to steal from because it would be scary. But they do it. And this would try to end that. But it's not moving. And the Republicans in the House are concerned about that.
So there, I didn't know about this. So there's a Mason-Dixon line, which is the automatic sliding glass door that I can't do anything until that person steps a foot on the opposite side of the door, and then I can...
That's when it's considered they've stolen something, right? Ugh. If they're in the store and it's like hidden, and I'm going to tell you what, because I am the worst about this,
yeah.
And they probably should take my purse away. I hate taking stuff in the store with me, and I am the worst. I will go in and I will think I'm just going to get a couple of things, and I won't grab a cart because there's only big giant carts, no little carts where I shop. And I go, I'm not going to need it. I'm just going to walk and grab a couple of things. But then I get more things, and I always have a big purse. So I start sticking stuff in my purse to use it as like a shopping bag.
Yeah,
nobody I do the ever same calls thing. Me on it ever, except for one time I was at like a Ross, but not a Ross. I won't say the name of the store.
Okay.
And I'm in the line, which is like 25 people deep. I'm in the middle of the line, and the security guard, who's black, comes up to me. And he says, "I need you to empty your purse, ma'am." He got like all in my face and made the biggest scene, and I was like appalled. But I was so in the wrong. I was definitely in the wrong. But, so I don't do that anymore.
So this is, I think, the biggest problem with the general attitude towards crime that you might see in major cities, which is like, hey, man, we don't really want to come down on people who are poor, who are down on right. their luck. I heard this from Nicole Thomas Kennedy when she was running for prosecutor's office. She said, should we criminalize someone stealing a sandwich? Which is right. It's a legitimate question to ask. If someone is that destitute where they have to steal a sandwich, shouldn't we try to funnel that person to another kind of program? Now, the reality of this situation, though, is, I think, is that people are not just stealing sandwiches. They're stealing hundreds, if not thousands of dollars worth of makeup products like I saw at the pharmacy the other day. Mm-hmm. So...
And then they're not only stealing that to go, you know, even if it's the sandwich, they're not stealing that sandwich to go eat it themselves because they're starving. They and several others are stealing all kinds of sandwiches, taking it around the corner and giving it to the organization that they work for so they can sell it on the corner in a cart.
Right.
Do you know
what
I mean?
Yeah. And that's Jason posted pictures last summer of this. I forget where it was exactly, but he was walking and he had video as well where he's like walking down the street and it's just open air gypsy markets, effectively, where people have bottles of Tide detergent and they have right. plates from Marshall's or wherever, and they've got stuff that they've stolen that they are now selling at a discount out on the street. So Hannah, when I was a kid, my friends and I were all bad kids and we would steal the shooters of liquor and lighters from,
oh yeah,
you know, because they're right there on the counter, and so you can steal candy bars and lighters and shooters and Black and Milds before they put them behind the counter. And we thought we were so clever until my friend Willis was caught, because we would always go to the same liquor store in Monterey, California, and we just kept stealing. We'd steal like five lighters at a time, steal a bunch right. of shooters. Didn't really matter. My friend Willis finally got caught because the owner wised up to it, and that was the first time that he got charges for, oof. But not the last time he got charged for theft, right? I think he went to court, he paid a $500 fine, and was on probation, I think, for a year, maybe. That didn't deter him from doing that crime later as an adult. Right.
Wow.
He later would go and he would steal sandwiches from Safeway and walk around Safeway while eating the sandwich and looking at items like he wanted to buy something. And yeah. then but my thought is that I think the only way to really deter, how do you actually deter people from committing a crime in that way? Really low level crime where the stakes aren't very high, because you can't put somebody in prison for a year for stealing $20 worth of lighters, right? It just doesn't make any sense.
I think there has to be a level up, you know, if it's a consistent thing, like you do it, you know, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth offense, there's got to be something that you do for the accountability. I don't know what exactly that is, but if not, it's just these businesses that are just, it's ridiculous. Why would anybody even own one of these businesses right now? Half of them in Seattle downtown have shut down because of this, because your loss is so heavy that it's impossible to even break even. And this, I talked to some of these folks last year who own some of the businesses in the downtown core. They have to hire their own security because there's no cops that even respond to these calls.
Wow.
Right? And so that's another amount of money that they have to put out the door. It's not worth it. And it's not sustainable. You can't keep it this way. So I don't know, to answer your question. I know for me as a kid, my girlfriend and I were in the Kmart. I think I was in, junior high. She, unbeknownst to me, had swiped a lipstick and was in her pocket. And we're walking out the door and the guy stops us and she got arrested. But they took me with because I was with her and I was terrified. I was like, holy no. I don't want any of this. And I did the same thing to my kid when she stole a toothbrush from the Walgreens. She was like five. And I told her I was calling the cops and she was going to jail.
And I think that's what it is. When I had Mike Solon on a while back, we were talking about healthy policing and healthy communities, and that in many ways, when you have healthy policing and you have police who are actually able to do their job, like, for example, let's say it is somebody who actually steals a sandwich, having the police actually be able to, show up and actually talk to the guy who stole a sandwich, as opposed to just like hiring your own security guard who, like the guy that I saw who's hired to watch that pharmacy, that portly guy has no law enforcement experience whatsoever. And as a matter of fact, he's such
and no power. There's very limited authority there.
None. So I think that it goes back to that concept, healthy policing, healthy communities, and cops who are enthusiastic about their job as, the first line of defense for private citizens and private businesses.
I got to say this. Yeah. Bottom line is only reason that the only reason that it is so prevalent and so bad like it is now, there is no other explanation for it other than the fact that we stopped sending police to those types of calls. And these people know there will be no accountability. Otherwise, there's no way it grows this out of control.
I agree. And I think that most people with common sense would see that, which is that you need to have a healthy police department who's able to show up, who's able to talk to the guy who stole a bunch of lighters or a sandwich or a five-year-old who stole a toothbrush and tell them.
Right. Hey, I'm telling you. Hey. I was like, no, you don't.
So what's going on with the diversity thing at the state level? I'm curious about this. I saw this. You were talking about this before. There's some kind of they did not meet their diversity quota, I guess.
Right. So there was a state patrol diversity has been kind of an ongoing push. Last year, they set some goals that are, fresh goals. They haven't, they missed the, deadline for that necessarily yet. But there was a couple of reports that were recently done that looked at the totality of staff at the state patrol. And I think out of just under 1,000 staff, it was like 3%, between 3 and 5% were Black or Latino or women. Nobody above that. And it's an ongoing major issue, especially because diversity is a big thing when we're talking about state employers, right? So Washington State Patrol is through the state. And that's a big push of the governor's. So they're not there. So this bill that was heard yesterday, basically, it shifts some money around from the state patrol highway account. I think it's like $1.3 million to a different account so that they can use it to bring in a outside consultant who can really deep dive and see what some of the challenges are. Like, for instance, one of the challenges was that, in fact, a woman who testified, she tried to get in at the state patrol, but they used their in-house psych eval person to do the psych evals. And for some reason, nobody was passing those. I don't know exactly what the issue was, but that was one of the barriers. So now that policy has changed and now they use somebody outside of the state patrol to do those psych evals that you have to do before you're going to be a cop. Then that's supposed to make a difference, but they need to see what other barriers there are because they are, and it gets even worse up at the, higher levels, the non-commissioned kind of executive staff people. And then even the commanding staff, you've got predominantly white male staff. And that's more so than other police departments in the state.
I find that to be fascinating. My thought about it, though, is how many, if we're just talking about predominantly white men, how many women, I'm just really curious about this, I'd have to pull data sets about this, but how many women actually want to have that position and want to go through all the many,
and I don't have the exact number,
wow.
but I can tell you that it's many who testified at this hearing yesterday,
wow.
who have made noise about this. This is why it's an issue, including one. There was a long time. Let's see how much I want to reveal about this. She was a state patrol trooper. She's a black woman who was a state patrol trooper for decades. She worked at the state patrol, made it. She ended up being their public information officer for a very long time, but had hoped to move to the higher up command staff level and never got there. She just kept getting passed over and there was no reason for it. And in the end, she left. She left after decades and she is now the head of the Criminal Justice Training Commission Center, where we train all the cops in the state. So,
wow.
Was that it targeted at her or just happenstance based on policy or just is it a good old boys club? Who knows? I mean, when you talk about diversity, the head of the state patrol, by the way, the chief of the state patrol of Washington State is a black man. Hmm. So, and I've talked to him in the past about diversity and it's important to him. I know it's important to him. It's for some reason it's not connecting. So that's why they want to put this $1.3 million from the highway fund into this outside consultant, have that person come in and make sure that they do meet those diversity goals. The interesting thing that also came out though in this hearing was everybody came out and testified in support, including the state patrol and the president of the State Patrol Troopers Association said, absolutely, it is so important that we have a diverse force when we're talking about law enforcement, especially, he said. But I also want to stress how very important it is that we double down right now on our recruitment efforts, because we have lost so many cops, just like the SPD and everybody else. They had usually per academy class four or per quarter. I forget how they measure it. It was like 450 applicants. Typically, that was June of last year. That was the average typical number for a long time. Now it's 100 or so.
Wow.
That is a dramatic, dramatic drop. And they are way, way short on new recruits and losing. They've got those, you know, all those white males are old and they've been on the job a long time. They're going to retire.
Right? Yeah.
They're in that silver tsunami or whatever they call it. And they're going to be in trouble just like every other law enforcement agency, because those who have that experience are retirement age and they're going to leave.
Hannah Scott, you're the best. We appreciate you coming on, dropping truth bombs on a regular basis. Coming up next, Dr. Z is going to be coming on, and he's going to explain why that guy in Boston is not going to be getting a heart transplant because he doesn't want to get vaccinated. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back with Dr. Z coming up right after this. Joining us, Dr. Z, MD, PhD, Silver Fox Robot Brain, Dr. Williams and Nancy, always a pleasure to have you, sir. Dr. Z, there's a story that's becoming quite, what do you want to call it? It's becoming quite the hot button talking point. I don't know why, but it's becoming
all the rage,
and because we're cool kids here. You know what I'm talking about, Dr. Z. You're about to get into some hot, hot heart transplant talk.
Yeah.
And vaccine talk. So, there's a guy in Boston, Massachusetts. His name is DJ Ferguson, which is an awful name for a disc jockey. But his God-given Christian name is DJ Ferguson. He's 31 years old. He's a father of three. And he has been taken off of the list to receive a heart transplant. Why, you may ask? Because he is unvaccinated. Why, you may ask? Because his father, David Ferguson, said to the New York Post, "It's kind of against his basic principles. He doesn't believe in it. It's a policy they are enforcing, and so because he won't get the shot, they took him off the list of a heart transplant." And if you go down, Dr. Zied, in the comments of this story, this is a travesty beyond measure. How could the medical industrial complex possibly deny this man a heart? And to you, Dr. Z, I have an amusing anecdote. I'll be very brief.
Would you want me to? Do you want me to ring in on what I would do?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I would absolutely take him off the list.
Wow.
Because,
yeah.
No, because this is what I wonder is if somebody in that hospital.
Yeah.
You know, one of the doctors can go sit with this guy and explain to him, you are going to be on immunosuppressant drugs.
Oh.
You are at exquisite risk of dying and destroying this heart from COVID because you're immunocompromised. That's what's not, you know, that is not what's really in here.
Right. This is why we have you on. This is why you're on.
It's that post-transplant,
yeah,
kidney, heart, whatever. Your immune system is shut off. Now, they don't actually say why. And you and I talked about this when we were marveling at the genetically modified pig heart.
Yeah.
Why can't he just get one of those?
Well, you know, because it hasn't been FDA cleared yet, I think, is why he can't. But I'm sure he couldn't put himself on the list. But
I know why.
Why?
Because you also have to be on immunosuppressant drugs initially.
Who would have thought? So, Bill, I wish I could reach out to the people in the comment section because they're acting as if this is some kind of massive medical travesty. Sarah, my lovely significant other, she had a woman in her life that was basically like her surrogate mom. It was a woman named Lenny. And Lenny had congenital heart disease like you would not believe, Bill. I'm talking like stents and all in, you know, what are the valves in the heart constantly failing from weakness, like all this crazy stuff. By the time she was 50, she had the heart of somebody who was like 110. Do you know what I mean, doctor? Just totally, totally gave out on her. Didn't smoke. Totally congenital. So she gets put on the list for a heart transplant. But during this time, she's largely immobile and she develops diabetes, unfortunately, as a result of her inability to move. And so she wasn't able to get a heart transplant as a result of that. And they tried to manage her weight to get the diabetes under control. But unfortunately, it just didn't happen. And so she was ultimately denied the heart transplant and she transpired and it was very, very sad. So the reason that I tell this story is that because it's not medically unprecedented for physicians or cardiothoracic surgeons to say, because of your current medical status, I cannot give you this transplant because it would be effectively a waste of a heart. And as difficult as that is to hear, I think that somebody needs to explain that to DJ Ferguson and have him know, like, dude, you can go live a very happy, healthy life if you just get the J&J or whatever it is that you're so paranoid about and raise your three kids and not be an idiot. And that's what I'm going to say, Doc.
It's the boogeyman.
Right.
It's the boogeyman.
Right.
It's the boogeyman under your bed. It's going to get you. I mean, the guy's ready to put a heart, something foreign into his body and go on these immunosuppressant drugs.
Right.
But you're not going to take the vaccine?
I mean, Bill,
What do you think is going to happen?
But don't you know, Bill, that Big Pharma, not you, Stacey, Joe Ost, I need the sad music. Where is the sad music? Oh, here it is. Dr. Z, don't you know that Big Pharma puts demon squids in the vaccine so that they enter your heart and make you infertile and make sure that your soul doesn't get to Jesus? Haven't you seen the science? Haven't you seen the science on this, Dr. Z? That Big Pharma's coming in and trying to prevent us from living our lives the way it's supposed to be lived? Sorry, I had to do that, Dr. Z. What's on your
mind? No, I think you're right about that, but unfortunately, the check, the payment from Big Pharma that you and I are supposed to be getting hasn't shown up.
It hasn't shown up.
And so there's no check stub to look at and see what we're being paid for.
So, Bill, I find it really fascinating that your first hot take as an MD PhD and someone who has seen I don't know how many thousands of patients over your illustrious award-winning career, your initial reaction really took me. I was really surprised by that, Bill. You'd say absolutely not. I would not give him a heart. I find that to be fascinating, Bill, if I can be totally transparent. I thought that you might say, well, there might be some circumstance, so on and so forth. But the fact that he's going to be on immunosuppressants for the rest of his life, and that's one of the things that is recommended for people who are immunosuppressed to get, that makes sense to me, Bill.
Yeah, well, he can't have the heart without going on immunosuppressant drugs, because his immune system will destroy that heart.
Right. Okay.
And, you know, if you're not on immunosuppressant drugs, and you know, I find it fascinating.
Okay.
You know, I find it fascinating. I think maybe you would think this big news story, and then the guy's like, oh, okay, I'll take it. Nobody really asked me if I was serious. You know, which I hope that would be great if he could get it.
Well, I'm thinking, Bill, you know how you and I often talk about that Vegas mentality, right? We talk about people, I'm gambling, I'm in Vegas, I'm going to be the one who gets it.
Right.
If I have to choose, I'm a betting man. If I have to choose between the odds of surviving a surgery, a heart surgery, a heart transplant, and then getting to go raise my three kids versus the odds of having an adverse effect to the J&J vaccine, I'm going to go ahead with the one and where I get to live and raise my kids.
You
know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not going to go with the one where I die sticking to my principles because I read a couple of Facebook memes about the vaccine. And this garbage, by the way, Dr. Z, if I can say this. This garbage from his father who says it's kind of against his basic principles. He doesn't believe in it. Watch the video.
Living is against his basic principles.
Right.
Staying alive.
Staying alive is against his basic principles. Watch the video that the New York Times put out where they go down to the Ozarks and they've got dozens of people on ventilators and that one man is spouting libertarian talking points while he's actively dying. And then you come back to me and tell me that it's against his basic principles. I don't think people have basic principles when the option is either A, you leave your kids fatherless, or B, you get a shot that is... The chances of you developing complications from it are nominal at best, being that you're 31 years old. I'm done with my rant, Dr. Z.
Thank you.
I'm done. Dr. Z, will you join us again tomorrow? Because I want to talk to you about my toenail fungus and the science that you and I talked about over the weekend. I got to know what's going on with my toes.
Why, I would be glad to.
We'll take a really quick break. Dr. William Zananti, MD, PhD. You can find him at ZanantiMD.com, or you can also submit a question, and maybe we will answer it on the air. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this. Have I mentioned to you my thoughts and feelings on COVID-19 ever? Have I mentioned to you my various thoughts on COVID?
Never once, Jack. Never once have I heard you ever mention any bit of the word about COVID-19.
You know, it's been 2 years, Shane, and I think it's finally time for me to share my thoughts, because I've got two of them going on right now. All right, Shane, so the presence of Omicron subvariant is confirmed in Washington State. It is officially labeled capital B, capital A, .2. That's according to the State Department of Health. It is not considered clinically different from Omicron. That's another way of saying that it's infectious, but not as deadly as Delta or the original variant of COVID-19. And then this article that was written up over at My Northwest, if you want to check it out, they go on to say, more colloquially, it's been described as by some as stealth Omicron due to genetic traits. Researchers say it more difficult to detect in testing than its sister variant. But it's not spoopy. It's not scary. It's not spooky. It's just a variant of Omicron that isn't as bad. So the reason I'm of two minds about this, Shane, is it's nice to know. It's a fun little piece of trivia. We were all on Jeopardy together. Isn't this so much fun? But does it really matter? No, it doesn't matter at all. Come call me when my arms and legs will fall off from the newest variant of COVID-19. Come call me and tell me all about it when it's like Ebola. But if it's basically like a side variant, like a C-list variant, I'm not really interested in it. If this is the Joey Fatone of the NSYNC COVID, I don't need to know about it. I don't care. I want to know about Justin Timberlake. I want to know about AJ. I don't care about Joey Fatone. Does that make sense, Shane? Should I do another one? Should I do a more Zoomer-oriented reference?
I don't know. I get what you're saying. You don't really want a Ronnie James Dio. You want the Ozzy Osbourne. Like, if you
want
to know
about
it.
No, I want the Dio. I want the Dio. I want the Dio. 100%. Okay. I want the Dio.
Okay. I guess somebody's not like an original Black Sabbath guy, but I get it.
Well, let's just be honest, Shane, now that we're on the subject. I mean, I know that this is a point of contention between you and I. Ozzy is an amazing singer. Ozzy is one of the most underrated singers, I think, of the last 50-some-odd years. Ozzy put out a series of records that are timeless. He's put out hit after hit after hit after hit. I don't want to take anything away from Ozzy. If we rank singers, Ozzy is like 5 or 6 steps below Dio. Dio is up there with like Freddie Mercury. Dio is up there in terms of physical ability, technical skill. He's up there in the pantheon of great singers. He's just not as technically skilled.
I can side with you a little bit on that. I believe that Ozzy has a little bit more of that thing, that persona, that star power than Dio does. And I will say this, Jack, even though that Ozzy has pumped out more of the hit classics from Black Sabbath, I will say Heaven and Hell is probably their best album of all time, and that is not with Ozzy. So I will go forth and say that.
You literally took the thought right out of my brain. I was literally about to say.
It's a great album. I want to get a tattoo of the album cover. The album cover's sweet.
Oh, yes. Okay. So now that we've decided that little. Sorry.
Okay. Do we need to go back to COVID?
Not really. I mean, I just think it's dumb, Shane. Like, I appreciate the DOH coming out with this. I appreciate all the fun information. It was first detected in Denmark and the United Kingdom and India. Wow, it's so cool. But in actuality, does it really matter? If it's not of consequence, what is this other than a fun piece of trivia? What is this other than being asked, hey, what's the capital of Italy? You know what I mean? It's like it's basically useless. And I think to pump this out and to try to make it seem as if it is like a really big deal. I'm not saying that My Northwest is just doing this, but there are other organizations out there that I shall not name that have written stories that are very different. And they say something to the effect of new variant detected in Washington State. Oh, what are we going to do? Everyone's going to die from it's going to die from COVID-19. And it's just annoying. You know what I mean, Shane? At this point in time, it's just irritating, and I'm fine knowing about it, but I don't necessarily think it's like newsworthy in that way. Does that make sense, Shane? It's just not really like I'm much more interested in talking about the legacy of Dio than I am in talking about this new variant.
Wouldn't anybody?
Right. And I think that goes to say something, Shane. I think you and I just illustrated a perfect point, which is that if it was a variant of consequence, we would be discussing it and we would have Dr. Z talking about it and we would all be, oh, my God, what are we going to do? But the fact of the matter is that you and I just went on a 3.5-minute tangent about Black Sabbath and the merits of Ozzy Osbourne versus Ronnie James Dio. And that was much more stimulating conversation than talking about BA.2 or BA1.
Very much so.
And I think that says something about us as human beings and our natural attraction to topics that we find stimulating that are of merit and worth. And talking about BA2 is not of merit or worth. Hey, speaking of not of merit or worth, Billy Sunshine is coming in a couple of few, and I am feeling totally gassed tonight. So I think, Billy, we're going to be talking about the To Kill a Mockingbird being banned in a couple of school districts, as well as the concrete strike union that's going on in King County. What am I saying? I'm burnt out, Shane. There's a strike. Unions. Concrete. We'll be right back right after this.